lineouts, racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell.
I'm Liam Delcombe.
And the URC is now full in swing. Some of the Springboks are on holiday in Mauritius. The others are playing in the URC again. And we had a full weekend. Liam, you didn't have a URC weekend. You had a full weekend in other. I think you were playing other sports.
I was, yes. I saw the Springboks posting pictures of a club mid-holiday in Mauritius. I found myself in the Northern Hemisphere at a similar resort. So it felt a little bit weird doing or seeing these people doing all these things in the water and on beaches and stuff. So I kind of had a taste of what they were doing. It was very good.
But I saw as well, you had tested your tennis skills out against somebody who was a lot better tennis player than us back.
Yes, they had Joe Wilfried Tsonga at this particular resort where he is, I think he's just about the resident coach there. He started an academy. And I got to hit a few balls with him. And that was fun initially. Well, it was fun. But I did have to remind myself because there was a little crowd that built up on the side, not to make a complete and utter fool of myself. And of course, the first ball came my way and I duly smacked it into the net. Well, not smacked it, timidly found the net. It got better though.
Yeah, I had a similar experience a couple of years ago in a cricket net against one of the world's top fast bowlers where I thought I was going to show him and I was going to hit it back at him. I was going to at least hit the ball. And eventually took about four balls and I got bowled out four times. And no matter how I tried, I just realized this is not the game for me. But back to rugby.
Yeah.
So you didn't get to see much URC this weekend. So I'll probably fill in the
blanks. No, I didn't. You'll just have to deal with the bulk of this. I can tell you what I did at that time, though. So it's
we can do that. Well, you see, let the listeners decide if Liam had a better time or the rugby teams at that stage. And I think let's kick off. We're going to speak. Our guest today, as you'll hear a bit later, is Franco Horn. I'm saying Franco because you hear him interviewed. He's not Frankie Horn. He's Franco Horn. And the Lions captain, as they go on tour, he spoke to us, and especially after they just astounded us all. Halftime, 48-0, every pass stuck, every move they tried worked, everything happened. Edinburgh had no answer. And from 45-0, they lost the second half, 12-7, 55-12 they won. But still, an incredible performance by the Lions. There's something special brewing there. You get that feeling.
I saw some of the highlights, and the thing that struck me was, the thing I thought after watching a few seconds of it was, it was almost like schoolboy rugby, the way they went about their business in obviously a very serious competition, but they played with so much freedom and put the visitors to the sword, albeit in conditions that favored them, but still to play with that amount of confidence and going about their business with so much freedom, was good to see.
There are some caveats. I mean, it is still early in the season, and they were playing at 145 at altitude. I mean, it is a bit of a ridiculous time for the foreign team to
that
play.
Should happen more often.
Yeah, you should use that more often. I agree. But that opened the weekend, and then the Bulls, filled with their Springboks again, which wasn't surprising, went and put Ulster to the sword. And Ulster's a very good team. But that Bulls scrum demolition, you probably didn't see it, was... Yeah, sort of watching the Springboks in their prime, Carrot Steeler Cup is really becoming the silent assassin. And then at the back, Vili Leroux, I mean, everyone spoke about Kurt De Arendse's footwork, as they always do. But Vili Leroux coming into the back line on so many occasions gave this masterclass and reminded us of why he's still rated as one of the best attacking players in the world. And yeah, he really got his back line away. And the Bulls really also looked confident as well.
Whenever I think of Vili Leroux at his absolute best, and whenever people doubt Vili Leroux, I think of two matches. It's on the end of year two in 2013 when the Springboks beat Scotland 28-6 or something. They scored to Edwards. Appalling conditions. Vili was completely untouchable that day. It was as if he was on a different planet. Everything just worked. He was in the right position all the times. Put players into space. It was just a complete performance. And the other one was that win in Brisbane. I think it was the same year, if not the following year, same year. where they put Australia to the sword under Heinie Kamea. Another commanding performance. And I always think of Oliveira, you know, at his best, you know, in those two matches. I mean, he was just untouchable.
Well, I mean, you look at that. I mean, Vili, there's of course now a conundrum for Rossi going into the end of the year tour, because Vili's on 97 tests. He's got three to go. And we spoke a bit about this last week. You've got Kieran Horn at the Lions, who's got to come through. Apolede Fassi, who's done so well. And you've got Damien Willems, who's back. Plus, you could probably look at one or two other players as well in that position as well. So there's a couple of conundrums there. But talking about those games there, I was in Brisbane that day. And I remember just a short memory of that. That was the game that everybody carried on. Our week was filled with stories about Zane Kirchner being played at fullback. And, you know, some of the social media sort of vitriol that went around that week, which was totally unfair on Zane, because, yeah, he was one of those players who never really put a foot wrong for the Springboks. He wasn't spectacular, but he was an extremely solid player. And, yeah, he was exceptionally good for the Boxer in that test as well. But we sat dealing with that and all these sort of cartoons that were so almost bordering on racist about his hair and things like that. And so I remember being so happy in that game because there's one, I think, either Zane or Vili scored, I can't remember, but there was a backline move where they both were involved and Vili scored. And I was almost probably one of the happiest times I've been in the box, because I just knew what the players had gone through that week. The Scotland game, if I remember right, wasn't that the one with the famous picture of Makazole Mapimpi scoring with Stuart Hogg spread out on the field trying to catch, try to ankle tap him, and he missed him. There's a beautiful picture.
No, this was in 2013. I think it was before, it was well before Mapimpi. 2013 under Heinie Kamea. That was Vili's first international season. So he hit the ground running at test level. Yeah, that was just a wonderful performance.
I remember, anyway, that picture, I'm sure some of you probably saw it. It was my screensaver on my computer for months. I quite enjoyed that. Stuart Hogg had a lot to say before and after that game against the Box about how Scotland should have beaten that, but you know, should have, would have, could have, all that sort of stuff. But anyway, back to the URC. Then we had two South African teams overseas. We had the Sharks against the Dragons. And then you still haven't told us where you were in all these games, by the way. You said you were going to let us know. But the Sharks...
I think the first one, I think I was playing paddle as a warm-up to playing tennis later on. It was a very, very competitive paddle match, I have to say. Probably the most competitive I've been involved in.
Okay, no professional tennis players in that one.
No.
Well, at 6 o'clock in the evening, so you're probably getting ready for dinner at that stage, the Sharks played the Dragons. That was one of those games where you get a bit frustrated as a South African or a Sharks fan. The Dragons ended last year, and while they may have improved and the conditions may have suited them, the Sharks had so much firepower in that game and just were the Sharks of old, or the Sharks of the last couple of seasons. And they struggled so much against them. But there's one point I want to get to. In the 82nd or 83rd minute, with the Sharks, you know, just behind the Dragons and pressing for the win, they got a penalty 5 meters out. The Sharks decided to scrum, which I thought at the time was a stupid move, because they could have gone for the line-up. Their maul was working well. But they decided to scrum. Their scrum was strong. But the problem is, with the new laws, Dragons were clever. And that's one of these things where people think the impact of the new laws. Dragons went in and they engaged. It was quite clear that the intent was to engage in. And so the ref gave a free kick. But now with the law like it is now, you can't scrum again from a free kick. So the Sharks had to take a tap penalty. And, you know, just that's one of those things where it's a terrible law. It's a harsh law.
Yeah.
And the Sharks should have been cleverer at the moment. But, you know, there's so much adrenaline flowing at that stage on the field. Luckily, the Sharks still got the try to win. But, yeah, that's the one thing. And the other thing is, why do we always struggle against teams like the Dragons? They're not in the top eight, class-wise, but South African teams just struggle against them the whole time.
Yeah, the Dragons, they do. They have means and ways of staying in the contest. They've showed that the last few seasons. But in terms of substance, I don't think there is a lot. About the scrum, I mean, we saw this coming. I mean, there's no surprises there. I can understand if the lawmakers made those adjustments or those amendments, and if the attacking team engaged early or made a mistake, that under normal circumstances would then produce another scrum. If it's the attacking team doing it, and the option is then taken away, then I can vaguely understand it. But to reward the team that clearly doesn't want to scrum, who's defending, it just seems wrong. It just gives the other team an out. Why scrum in the first place in that scenario anyway?
Well, it sits in the same sort of area as me as the goal line dropout. I feel if a team attacks and the team holds them up and the defending team gets a goal line dropout, that doesn't really make sense to me. Often, I don't know, I just feel that if you're going to reward attack, why do you reward defense? And this is part of a bigger problem I have with World Rugby is that every year, when they tinker with laws, they come up with these new, and they always call them fan-based laws. That's their wonderful word for it. They tell us they've spoken to the fans, and fans want this, and there's more ball in play. But ball in play has always been a terrible measurement of entertainment. To have more ball in play doesn't mean there's more entertaining rugby. And so they keep on giving us these fan-based laws. And then we ask them, which fans did you consult? There's dead silence. So, yeah, to me, it's like the 20-minute, they're going to bring in our global trial of the 20-minute red card. Nobody really wants it. You talk to all the teams, they're not overly joyed about that. I think rugby could do itself a lot bigger favors by actually just deciding what is a red card and what isn't, because that's still quite a gray area. So sort out what is a red card rather than change it that you can actually still be rewarded for getting it.
Yeah, I mean, rugby has been at this crossroads for a while now where it's the growth of the game that they have to think of, which clearly is important. They have to, but compared to or versus the things that have always made rugby great, why people have been attracted to it, why it has its sort of traditional fan base. When the integrity of the sport is in question, then you have to ask, you know, aren't we pushing it too far? And you make a good point about the fan-based decisions that they make, because you would think that the people involved in the game, the ones, the players on the field, would have the biggest say in how the game is played and is shaped. I don't know to what extent, you know, how they weight things before they make a law amendment, but I would prefer to see greater input from the players.
Yeah. Anyway, this is it's like a global season. I've sort of got to the point that I'm also wondering off on the sidebar here, but the global season to me has now become like the Loch Ness Monster, a wonderful fable, a lovely thing to talk about, but you're never going to see it. So, unfortunately, let's move back to the other game, which was in the evening, which I'm sure you still weren't playing panel about it. The Stormers took on Zebra Palmer in their wonderful ice cream yellow shirts. And not a great game to watch, but typical Stormers game in terms of it was slow poison. They were exceptionally good in scoring when they needed to. Their defense was solid, and they scored the four tries that they needed. They won quite easily, 36-5, but not spectacular. But a workmanlike team's almost a bit underrated the performance. It was getting the job done.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't see any of this one, but the Stormers have at times been a very frustrating team to watch on the road because they do some wonderful things and then they find ways of undoing it a few minutes later. I think their fans would probably want to see more consistent performances on the road, but this certainly is a step in the right direction. Got the job done, got the four, the tries, got the bonus points. So job well done.
It was very much one of those performances that you think they used to try and do this flashy stuff that they do at home where obviously the ball sticks and on their fast pitch back at Cape Town Stadium, they get certain things done. And they often tried that last season on the road and things would kind of stuck in the wrong conditions. And this was very much playing the conditions for what they were, striking when you get the chance. Perfect, sort of not flashy, but perfect way to win as well.
We should probably look at this weekend's games and look into the crystal ball.
Make some predictions. Get them probably a bit wrong, but let's make them anyway.
That's our obligation.
Okay, so I'm going to go through the games. You tell me what you think.
Okay.
I'll give you also. Start off on Friday, Glasgow hosting Zebra at Sproxton.
This should be fairly straightforward. I think convincing win for the home team, and I'll give it a winning margin of 24 points.
Yeah, I think the same. Zebrugge did beat Munster 2 weeks ago, but that was at home, and the Stormers showed how to dismantle them. Glasgow, you know, they're second on the log, they defending champions. They've got too much class. I think also I'm probably going to go by 30 points. Maybe I feel a bit sorry for the Italians. I think Glasgow's will be way too much class. But okay, yeah. Moving on. Saturday, first game at 4 o'clock for a change, not because all our teams are now overseas, not at 1:45. Cardiff host Scarlets in a Welsh derby.
Tricky one to call. I am going to go with the home team, and it won't be by much. It'll be by four or less.
Yeah, derby's always difficult to call, but Cardiff seem to have a bit of a resurgence in them this season. They're currently fifth, they're only 3 rounds in, but Scarlets look like they have the same problems in the last couple of years. I'd say Cardiff by 7-8. Then the first South African team playing 4 o'clock Saturday, Benetton hosting the Sharks.
I think the Sharks could go on a decent run here. I'm going to go with them, but Benetton haven't really convinced so far, have they? So I'm going to go Sharks, and I'm going to go with them by 7.
Yeah, I think if the Sharks should have all the firepower, they should have enough there. But Benetton as well, we thought pre-season they would make a much better start. Mm. Yeah, and they haven't. In fact, I think they've lost their first couple of games, all three games. They're certainly a better side than that. They are a top 8 side, but yeah. I think the Sharks will be buoyed by that win that they got against the Dragons and should have a little bit too much class. It's going to be a close one for me. I think the Sharks by 5, probably.
Yeah, at some point, Benetton will click back into gear. Sharks fans will hope it's not in this game.
And then straight after that, 6:15 on Saturday, the Stormers travel to Edinburgh. Edinburgh, obviously, still hurting. In fact, what they called their own performance an embarrassment against the Lions, which is probably an understatement in Edinburgh fans' eyes. But the Stormers are coming off that win. They'll smell a bit of blood there. But Edinburgh, Sean Everett's under pressure, having lost all their games so far in the competition.
Yeah, they will be under pressure. And then there's also the travel factor we need to be cognizant of here. The Stormers would have had a shorter journey. I'm going to go with the Stormers. I think last week's win, as you said earlier about the Sharks, I think the Stormers will also be buoyed by the last performance. But Edinburgh, they almost certainly will be better than last week. So a tight game, but I'm going to give it to the South African team by 3 points.
Yeah, those games tend to bring out a lot of pressure, and there'll be a lot of pressure on Edinburgh to put in such a performance. So you can expect a response from them. Whether it'll be enough, I'm not sure. I think the Stormers should win that one as well, and I think I agree with you with your scoreline there. Then, the big game of the weekend, I suppose in URC terms, not so much in South African terms, but a certain game at Croke Park where 75,000 tickets have been sold. First place, Leinster, against third place, Munster.
I'm going to go with Leinster, and I'm going to go with Leinster delivering a commanding performance in the end. I think it'll be tight to start off with, but Leinster winning in the end by 10 points.
Yeah. I think Leinster at this moment, they on song. At this stage of the season, they don't really have many flaws. Everything goes well for them. Once they go into the international season and they pick up a couple of injuries, they do have depth, but that's when some of the cracks start coming through sort of late in the season. And while they're never an easy team to beat, especially in Dublin, teams tend to pick up one or two things that they can exploit. I think at this stage of the season, they're a much better side than Munster. Munster tends to come better late in the season as well.
Yeah.
So I would probably say as well, Leinster by 10 or more points. It's quite a bold prediction, mate, but Leinster's looking really good in this opening couple of rounds of the URC. Another South African side, eventually 8:35, a little bit earlier before the clocks go back. Ospreys, a tricky game for the Bulls.
It is a tricky game. I feel that a lot will hinge on how they set out their stall, how they select their team. I think they're capable of winning this game by 12 points, but they're also capable of losing it. So depending on who they put out, I'm going to go with the Bulls win, and I'm going to say Bulls by 12.
Yeah. Ospreys have been notoriously tough for South African teams. Another one of those teams. Yeah. And they are quite a tricky side. I mean, they made the top 8 last year, right on the edge there. They probably ruined the Stormers season with that win in Cape Town as well. So they are a difficult side to play, especially at home. But the Bulls have included all their box for this tour. So if they pick their strongest team for this, they should have enough class. And yeah, I'd say probably it's not going to feel comfortable ever, but the Bulls should eventually win by 7 to 8 points, but it'll be only in the last of the 15 minutes.
Man.
Then we go to the last game on Saturday, another derby. Interesting one as well, because for once, the home team is not the one in form. Ulster, normally the team in form in this, they face Connacht. Connacht have done pretty well. They started the season exceptionally well. They come back win against the Sharks 2 weeks ago, and they won last week. They're fourth on the log at the moment. Ulster, after two losses in South Africa, are 13th and also under a bit of pressure to perform.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Ordinarily, I'd go Ulster, and I'd go probably Ulster by eight. However, there's the travel factor. And as you well pointed out, Connacht on a decent run. I think if ever they thought going to Belfast, where they had a chance and whether the hosts are ripe for the taking, I think it's this occasion. So I'm going to go Connacht by three.
Yeah, interesting caveat on that one. Ulster coach Richie Murphy will come up against his son, who plays scrum half for Connacht this week. So a bit of a family connection there makes it a little bit more tense, I suppose, at the Sunday lunch afterwards. But it'll be an interesting one to watch as well. And then Sunday at Rodney Parade, the team that we say frustrates South African teams, against a team that's in so much form at the moment, it's hard to not to back them, the Emirates Lions against Dragons.
Yeah, I'm going to be brief on this one. I think the Lions on a good run, quite literally, full of confidence. They've got a good record against the Dragons as well. I think they've got 4 wins and 1 draw in their matchup. And I think another decent Lions performance here. Lions by 10.
Yeah, I think they might. It all depends how they handle the conditions and what conditions they get at Rocky Parade as well. But I think at the moment the confidence is sky high. They'll play with that confidence. They'll give them the win as well. So I agree with your scoreline there. So that's the weekend's wrap. And I suppose the only thing left for us to do now, is just to say we go into our main interview. And speaking of the Lions, it's actually a good segue into that interview with Franco Horn, the Lions captain, who chats a bit about his short but very impressive career so far, and what the Lions expect on tour.
Our special guest today on To The Last Drop is Lions loose forward Franco Horn, who is a man who is extremely impactful, whether he wears a number 8 jersey or in fact any other jersey for that matter, but it's at number 8 where we have seen most of his destructive powers. Franco, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for me to represent the Lions. I'm looking forward to the show.
Wonderful. Thank you. Tell our listeners where exactly you are at the moment.
I'm still in Johannesburg. I'm ready to pack. We are flying out tomorrow afternoon to Wales. So just packing. I'm living here in Serengeti Golf Estate, so a little bit outside the city. Coming from Paul is the closest that I could get to that. City life is not exactly for me. So also enjoy golf. So really blessed to be living on a golf estate.
Yeah, the reason I asked because I can see the light where you are is quite sharp, and it's not the light that I'm accustomed to in Wales, where it can be quite glum. So let me just make sure that you are here. Now, obviously, a big tour for you guys. You've made a wonderful start to this season's URC. 2 wins, and not just 2 wins, 2 dominant performances. You must take a lot of confidence with you to Wales.
Yeah, I think obviously we got our 10 points that we wanted at home, and we said we wanted to start the URC campaign really good and take that momentum onto tour. And then if you look, I think the momentum has been building the last few games of the URC in the previous season. We were in a really good run. And then obviously the guys that played Currie Cup, and a lot of them are still busy playing. We spoke about just carrying that momentum forward and that confidence. So you can definitely see the guys are playing with freedom, playing for each other. And like you said, with a lot of confidence. And that just puts yourself at ease to do what you do best, because you know the guy next to you is also doing his best.
Mm. We know rugby can be very much a momentum sport. So you brought, obviously, a lot of momentum out of Currie Cup into URC. And now two very good performances. When you look back at Currie Cup, what do you think were the main things that you were able to take out of it? Apart from momentum, I'm talking about your game. What were the things that you took out of that that could carry you forward into URC?
Well, I think definitely in every position now, there's two, three guys pushing to be the best in that position. So that just the guy that's starting, he knows that he must bring his absolute best and try and keep that jumper where the other guys is pushing to get that jersey from you. And then any successful team, healthy competition is always a core somewhere, pushing the standards, raising the standards. And as you can see, even though there's sometimes a tweak within the team, there's not a lot of disruption. So we a squad of 42 guys training against each other. So we do the same detail. We do the same launches, the same defense, line-out scrums. So you can just see if there's maybe injury or if there's a rotation, the guys just slots in them and then they bring something different.
Yeah. Yeah, and some people might have been under the impression that if you look at the way the Lions fell at the final hurdle in the Currie Cup final, that heads may drop a little bit. You know, there might be a bit of a loss of confidence, but I take it that wasn't the case.
So that week, we were off Monday, so just to like get a little bit over that disappointment. But regarding that disappointment, I think that was just even more motivation to start the campaign really good because it was so close, but yet so far. And it was something that we were honest about and said, listen, there's a lot of lessons that we could have taken out of the last 30 seconds from that game. So if we somewhere along the season get into that position that we know how to finish the game. And if you look back at last year, there were probably three or four games that we lost with 1 or 2 points that we felt we could have won. So it was bad in terms that we didn't win, but it was really good lessons that we could learn and use that as motivation for the first few games.
And I take it, I mean, processes and systems and all those things, you've ticked all those boxes. It was just that at the final hurdle, basically, where things didn't click. I wanted to ask you about the tour. You obviously, if you look at last year's performances, it was a decent tour, a big win over Connacht, and I think you came close to, you ran Ulster very close as well. So a solid tour. So not just the two wins now, to give you confidence, but then also the knowledge that you can perform on the road.
Yes, definitely. I think statistically, we're really good touring side. Our first tour last year, we only beat Scarlets, but we lost Edinburgh by 1 point and Benetton by 5 and Ulster by 7. So looking back at those games, we felt a few of those games we could have won. And then obviously that big win against Connacht later on in the season. So yeah, I think on tour, it's a smaller squad, so you all day, every day in each other's company, you go and explore new places, and I mean, it feels almost like a fresh start when you get to that site, depending on the weather, because like you said, it can be a little bit gloomy and stuff, so just adjusting to that, where now it's here, I mean, 30 degrees sunny, where it can be 10 degrees and raining, so it's just a little bit of conditions adapting and new plans, but the basics still stays the basics.
Frankie, I just want to go back maybe to when you were a youngster. You came into the Lions setup under a very strange set of circumstances. You came in during COVID, during the Lions tour, and you guys played the British and Irish Lions, and you were, I think, 21 years old at the time, and you were named captain of the side. It was probably one of the most bizarre tours of our lifetime. But I think we all feel a bit weird looking back to COVID. It feels like another lifetime altogether. But just maybe take us back through how all that happened and your thoughts on that, becoming captain in that time.
Yeah, I think I was 21 at that stage. So obviously it was a massive honor and privilege for me to be captaining the Lions against the Lions. Like you said, there was COVID. So there was quite a few guys that couldn't play in the beginning of the Currie Cup. So then they appointed me as captain. And then, I just stayed captain for 7 or 8 games and the British and Irish Lions game fell within that 8 games. So, it was a little bit of the luck was also on my side. But it was also a big confidence boost, the coaches having that confidence within me to be able to lead a team at that age. And then, for the last 2 years, I wasn't captain, but I was part of the leadership group and just the growing a little bit, because there was a stage where my rugby dipped a little bit regarding being captain and all that external pressure. So yeah, and at the moment there's a lot of really good leaders around me that helps me and makes the job a lot easier. So yeah, enjoying it at the moment.
You talked about that, Frankie. I mean, you were 21. I mean, most players dream about playing against the British and Irish Lions. It's one of those things. It's one of those boxes you tick. You want to do that as a player, and now you get the chance at 21. Has it sunk in, or is it just such a weird time in terms of everything that was going around without fans in the stadium and just how weird the whole tour was anyways? Is it something, does it feel like you've always thought it was going to be?
Well, the occasion was definitely what I thought it was going to be, maybe even better than what I thought. Obviously, fans would have been really great, but we weren't the only team that didn't play in front of fans. But I still have the booklet of the two teams, and then I played against Toby Faletau, so I have his jersey. So really, really special moments for me, and to have that memorabilia just makes it real. So if you ever feel like it didn't happen, I can just go and have a look and see again what I was part of.
Now, playing for the Lions, well, our Lions anyway, has been a pleasure to watch over the last, I would say, almost a decade, because obviously the Lions went to 3 Super Rugby finals. They've been a bit more sporadic since then, but they've always played a decent brand of rugby. And when I say decent, a very watchable brand of rugby. And in the last few years, you've been instrumental in that as well. Often we see you pop up in those wider channels. Playing number 8 for the Lions must be, it looks like it's fun.
No, definitely. I think the style of play suits me perfectly. From a young age, I loved playing with the ball, attacking, linking with backs, passing, beating defenders. So obviously that our tight five is really doing a hard job in the middle of the field, getting us quick ruck, maintaining ball. And then with the outside backs that we have at the moment and the loose forwards, it really gives us a lot of freedom to do your X factor, your party trick, and to play off each other. Like you could see last weekend, there was probably some of the best tries I've been part of. And yeah, just playing off each other, everybody knowing where each other are. So yeah, like you said, it's fun and enjoyable, and it fits to my strength. So really enjoying it.
And how does that change if you go to a destination like Wales where conditions might be different? We have seen the Lions turn it on there as well. Do you take a bit more of a pragmatic approach this time around? Is it more about the result rather than the way you go about your business?
Well, there's obviously a difference between playing in 10 degrees rainy weather that side and playing in 30 degrees here. So the plan will slightly change, but because we have the type of players that can make something out of nothing or break the game open, we're still allowed to do that and play like that. But it's also what the opposition gives you and what the conditions give you. So some games might be a little bit tighter for me, especially playing a little bit tighter, more mauling, scrumming, a bit more kicking game, and then on turnovers, try and score some tries. But I mean, some days overseas, you also get a really nice sunny day, a little bit cooler, but then we can still just play like you say, in terms of the enjoyable rugby and yeah.
There certainly seems to be a lot more belief in the Lions at the moment. And it feels like your squad is really, yeah, you guys really enjoy playing together. And everything obviously clicked on Saturday against Edinburgh. First off, it was amazing. But do you think, get the sense that you guys are on the verge of something bigger at the moment, that those dreams that you have can come true, that you could make it to the top 4 as you guys have targeted?
Yeah, definitely. I think last year, I mean, we, like I said, it was a few games that we came really close, and right at the end, we only missed out with Ospreys winning one game more than us. So we were really disappointed in not making the top 8. I think that was a big target for us, and missing it by such a small margin, and then the Currie Cup going straight to the final. I think that belief and confidence that we are good enough, and that we can play against any team and beat any team anyway. I think that started to sunk in, and that's our lingo and how we start talking in terms of a championship mindset and a championship team. So I definitely think when Tua goes well, that top four spot is a big target for us, and we'll try and reach that as best as we possibly can.
It would probably be a little wrong to leave this question out, but I mean, you play in a country where there's loose forwards, we are falling out of trees. I mean, Rossi has got, he's got literally thousands to pick from. Well, not literally, but, and I think you know, there's obviously people that support you and want you to become a Springbok, and that's obviously your goal in your career as well. But it must be daunting as a loose forward, knowing that there's just so many other good loose forwards that can make it, you know, make that standard extremely high. And you've got to play yourself into the team rather than somebody playing themselves out.
Yeah, no, I mean, South Africa has always been blessed with loose forwards, like you said. And at this moment, I mean, there's probably 20, 25 loose forwards that's really playing good rugby. And my ambition will always be to play for the Springboks. I mean, that's every single child's dream. So for me, it's just continuing what I'm doing and even improving on smaller stuff. And yeah, I can just hope to play the best rugby I can and then getting picked to join a camp or something like that and then trying to impress from there.
I've got one more for you, and it has to do with the tour. Obviously, you start your tour this weekend against the Dragons, and it's a team against whom you've enjoyed a lot of success, 4 wins and a draw, and you've beaten them fairly well, you know, on most of those occasions. Have you identified matches on this tour, you know, where that would be winnable? In other words, you can rotate your squad after maybe one game or two games. Have you identified games where the priority is a bit higher there than maybe in another one?
I won't say it's like that. I mean, always the target will be to get 15 points. I mean, 3 games, 5 points a game. I mean, that's always a target. And sometimes it's not always reachable, but that's what we're going for. And if you look at the Dragons, I mean, they took the Sharks to the 84th minute and the Sharks had to go and score after, I think, 15 phases. So the Dragons is a really improved team. I mean, Zebre beat Munster 2 weeks ago and they were quite close with the Stormers until like 60 minutes. So both of them, I mean, it's not a walk in the park at all. Both of them have improved dramatically. They've changed a little bit regarding their game and they're two tough oppositions. So we're not taking any game lightly. There's nothing that we identified in terms of this is going to be easy win. We're going to have to work for it and play to the best of our abilities to walk away with the most points that we possibly can out of the tour.
Frankie, just on that, I mean, your third game's against Leinster at the Aviva. That's a big game for any team. But I think one of the things we've seen in the UFC over the last couple of years is that too many teams almost write off that game. You know, I think that they're not going to beat Leinster in Dublin. So they sort of pick a mix-and-match team or rotate players, you know, almost writing the game off. I take it that's not the way you guys are looking at the game, because certainly, you know, a win at a place like that, it can probably do wonders for the squad's confidence.
I don't know exactly what you said. Like, with Leinster, you never know what team they pick, but their BOC time is very, very close to what the A-side bring. So it's never an easy game. But for us, it's, I mean, we first need to get past the first two games. But we said we want to go and get 15 points on tour. So we're definitely seeing that game as just another game. And like you said, that can also be a really big confidence boost if you can beat Leinster in the Aviva. And I think, I mean, I haven't played and I don't think there's any one of our players has played there before. So something that we're really looking forward to, and it's going to be a really special occasion.
Just one last personal thing. Your name's spelled a bit differently to the normal Frankie, with the CKE. Where does that come from? I think of that every time I have to put your name into a team sheet and an article. So maybe just give us the background. How did you get that spelling for your name?
Well, it's actually, so obviously I know people call it Frankie, but it's actually Franke. So that's the pronunciation of it. And so
thank goodness I got it right.
So yeah, my dad's name is Francois and my mom said she knows too much Francois, so I'm not exactly sure how they got to Franke, but yeah, it's a very unique name. And obviously, because my fun is horn, I get easily linked to Frankie Horn that played seven. So I think that's where the connotation came from. But it's actually Franco, yes.
We'll get Frankie said, well done.
Yeah, and we must get the commentators to pronounce it right as well. Well, Frankie, what we also did in the show, it's also called To The Last Drop for a reason. And being from Paul, I have to ask you, and this is a very good segue to get into that part. We also talk a bit about wine, and you know, growing up in that part of the world, I'm sure you have a favorite wine variety. And when you're away from the field with your family and your friends that you relax with.
I actually don't need to, I can't answer it because I'm really not a big wine drinker for a guy that comes from Paul. My wife, she loves the wine, but I just rather stick with the brandy and Coke. That's my poison, yes.
That's a good poison.
The last bit is that's just wrapping up. Just wanted to leave you with something like, we really want to see the Lions do well this year. And so I think that really, we'd really, really enjoy it if they do well. So we hope you guys play well in that tour and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Franco. Perfect. And give it horns.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app. That is